This is the London FinTech Podcast, bringing you practical insights and approaches, stories and inspiration from the innovators who are building the new world of financial services. Welcome to London FinTech Podcast. Several previous guests on this show have talked about crypto being the next 50 years of finance. I've spoken to quite a few crypto leaders in recent episodes, but today I'm joined by a representative from the world's fastest and most actively used blockchain. My guest today is Ben Brophy, Solana Foundation Head for Institutional across Europe. Ben oversees the larger scale adoption of Solana's blockchain, so I'm thinking this is really the institutional end of the market, and we're going to be talking to him about what that means and who's using the chain and really what lies ahead as well. Solana is valued at over $100 billion and processes millions of transactions a day. Welcome, Ben. It's great to see you.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Hugh.
So tell us a bit about you, your background, and how you came to be working with Solana.
Yeah, so I'm 5 months into the role now. Prior to this, I was at Fidelity International for 3 years, running their blockchain team there, where we did tokenizing bonds, tokenizing funds. Prior to that, I've been in blockchain since 2015. So seen a few things in my time and the interesting cycles that we've gone through. But earlier in my career, I started off doing international cash at NatWest and RBS, which no longer exists anymore, which makes me feel quite old. Yes. But yeah, so my career's probably been a spotted history of have worked in kind of institutions, in corporates, been on the kind of deep end of blockchain, a little more back to corporate and then back to Solana again.
Yeah, it sounds like a perfect background for what you're doing with Solana, because as I understand it, it's one of the chains that's increasingly adopted by institutions. It's very much been built to work with the corporate end of the market. So the fact that you started out in what traditional finance, or should I say TradFi, maybe that was the only fi at the time, and then 10 years in blockchain sounds like the right place to be coming from.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just having a respect for both worlds. I think they're different cultures, different dynamics, different intent. I think it's important where, you know, when we look at technology, it's come from the periphery in. So I think a lot of our blockchain story has been from periphery, and now we're seeing from the center adoption. So I think you need to understand both worlds to really drive that adoption.
Yeah. So let's start with Solana. I'd love to know a bit more about the Solana Foundation. What's the origin story, if you will, for Solana? And, you know, why was it created and how long has it been around?
Yeah, so Solana emerged. Well, I think it's important we look at blockchain and blockchain's kind of story overall. So, you know, we all go back to the source, which is Bitcoin. I think it's important to understand there that often that's a psychologically different view of kind of how to share value. So if you look at traditional finance, we're looking at centralized entities, a view that you want trusted counterparties to hold your money, move your money, custody your money and your assets. I think it's always important, sometimes it gets missed, that Bitcoin itself is sometimes a different, diametrically different view of that, which is around self-custody, a right that I as an individual have the right to move value and I'm the entity that can decide that. So I think it's important to acknowledge kind of where it started off and where Bitcoin starts off. Then you see the emergence of Ethereum, which is programmability. So I think it's really important to acknowledge and recognize the impact that Ethereum had, which was we moved from Bitcoin, which is this ability to move value, and then move to Ethereum, which is the ability to program assets. Solana emerged really from where we're starting to see networks and starting to see performance. I really look at Tolly and Raj, who are kind of the founders of Solana. Their perception was to take their background, which is, you know, Qualcomm, which was deep systems engineering, you know, the full stack engineers. And they were looking at this technology and looking from a maturity point of view. And their view was that this really should be about performance. This should be about kind of a payments mindset. As you see, we want to be NASDAQ on the internet. We will be NASDAQ on the internet. And that's really about a focus around core performance, how to move data efficiently, how to confirm transactions efficiently. So I think the core part of Solana, when you hear us talking about Solana, is that product mindset, which is we want to be a high-performance product so then companies can build excellent solutions. So I think we have that obsession in the foundation. The foundation itself, and you'll probably hear a couple of aspects being called out. So we're essentially, as I see it in my language, I just think we're kind of like, more like an NGO. So our job is to support the growth of Solana and Solana adoption, but we're non-commercial. We're a foundation itself. So we do everything from running grants, looking at investments to how we grow the economy, all the way through to engaging with banks, institutions, startups, scale-ups, everything really in terms of how we can drive understanding and adoption of the technology. So that's where we sit today. A couple of aspects you'll hear us talking about. We have also have super teams. So we have global teams across the world that work with startups and scale-ups. really to get them into the into our ecosystem is really kind of a broad overview of Solana, if that's useful.
Okay, so quite a lot there, but what I would take from that is that you're essentially part of that third wave of blockchain build out. So starting with Bitcoin and then programmable through Ethereum, and obviously that's still underpinning a huge amount of infrastructure that's out there, but then Solana being part of that third generation of performant networks. So Ben, throw me some numbers. So we're talking about transactions per second, numbers of developers. Can you give us a sense of the scale of Solana?
Yeah, so look, with our intent from a Solana point of view to be NASDAQ on the internet, performance is key. So today you're looking at 65,000 transactions per second, which is going to improve. We've got some more deployments coming up, which is going to significantly increase that, heading up towards the millions. So this is where we're trying to get to with that, is instantaneous settlement. And as you know, from a financial institution perspective, that is key. We want atomic settlement. I need to know when I do delivery, I get payment. So really from a Solana point of view, we are on track, or we'll be achieving that from a financial institution perspective. I think really other useful metrics from my point of view are a few more. So in terms of users, we really like to focus around developers as well. So we have nearly 10,000 developers building, deploying, scaling on Solana. I think that's really important when you look at technology itself and how you grow adoption, which is fundamentally, it's about builders. And what we can look at from a Solana point of view is that we have these really fantastic metrics where not only do we have speed and performance, but clearly we have adoption and we have builders using it too.
Yeah. And what role does the foundation take then? So you touched on it, but curious sort of how big is the foundation and what are the guide rails that the foundation operates within?
Yeah, no, great. So look, there's only 70 of us from a foundation perspective spread across the globe. I think principally we kind of look at a number of areas. So we have a core infrastructure team, which is looking at the underlying performance of the chain itself. Coming kind of working back up, we have our solutions team where they can sit and work with directly with financial institutions, with some of our counterparties, some of our consultancy partners, corporates as well, which is, you know, really crafting those high performance Solana based solutions. I sit in the growth team. So the growth team, per its name, is really to go out into the market. And as you mentioned, it's everything from how do we raise awareness? How do we move up that educational curve? I think it's really important still being a little bit humble, which is today we can say the word blockchain. I think it's really important to acknowledge that for a number of institutions, it might not be their priority technology today. So how do we really engage with them and inform like how it can add value to their business, but then also take them on that journey as well, which is, you know, in Solana Foundation, we don't build applications. So really importantly, if you want to build on chain, you know, where's my custody solution? Where's my stablecoin on off ramp? So a lot of that growth as well for us is about bringing the power of the ecosystem together, but presenting that in a way that institutions can adopt.
And we talked about this a little bit ahead of the show, actually, when we were getting ready for this. The blockchain technology itself is obviously and the way it's architected, a very key component. And we talked about transactions per second. But how much of the institutional challenge, if you will, is really around that broader ecosystem and the change management? And how do I integrate this into my treasury operation?
Yeah, I think it's really good. Look, I think, look, having been here for my sins for sort of 10 years, I think a long time we've been presenting blockchain purely as a technology solution. And then you were getting into, you know, conversations around where are my servers based, what's the security, different types of consensus. But a lot of these, I think, were quite theoretical. I think it's important to acknowledge from if you're going to build an on-chain solution, generally everything you can do today in finance, you can do on-chain. And the question is then, why? Yes, I think that's the fundamental indeed. One. Now, if you're going to answer the why, then you get to answer the how, which is generally where Solana arrives. We want to be the how. But really building on your question, I think where we're seeing that maturity today is for a number of years, on-chain solutions, and the reason why I use the word on-chain solutions, sorry, by the way, is my slight separation of there is blockchain as infrastructure, which is the way that probably where we started, like how do I just move packets of data? How do I confirm transactions? And then we have on-chain products, which could be tokenized assets. They could be crypto tokens themselves. And I really think it's interesting now seeing that maturity cycle where we've known for a number of years now that we can build these solutions on-chain. I think what we're seeing now is the emergence of, I guess, more from a product perspective and from a value and from a revenue perspective, and Solana is obsessive about revenue, is that institutions are now seeing the ability to generate revenue from on-chain solutions. And I think that's really where we're going to start to see that next wave of adoption.
So, and I know blockchain folks talk about layers a lot, layer 1, 2, and 3. So Solana, layer 2 and the...
1.
You're a one.
We're a one. So it's a really good question. I think it, and good to frame. So look, I have a slight bias here. So if you look at that formation and evolution of on-chain solutions. In the Ethereum world, there was the creation of an L1 versus an L2, and L1 basically being where you're driving consensus at that mainnet level. The issue has been that the philosophy that the Ethereum ecosystem took was to build out other underlying L2s. And this is where they could build other functionality to run, either to serve certain sectors or drive certain speeds. And they then connected that back to the L1 to confirm. So that led to a segmentation of one L1 and multiple L2s.
Yeah.
In Solana, we don't do that. We just have one L1. And the reason for that, we believe with conviction, is that we're concentrating liquidity. So money is just on the L1. We're concentrating developers, which is what we can demonstrate. We have, you know, highest growth developer community. And thirdly, it's mindshare. So, you know, we have all of these phenomenally intelligent people, which is quite awe-inspiring to be around them at times, but they're all focused on building on Solana and building in one place.
And that means L1 means layer one. That means there's a single network, single blockchain.
Correct.
And all activity is focused on that.
Correct. Yeah. And all, if I could say, all development is focused there as well. So we acknowledge that, you know, we continually want to improve and develop Solana, but we'll concentrate our efforts in one place and then share that with all.
Yeah. Okay. So look, we'll talk a bit about your user base in a moment, I think. But at the time of this recording, it's interesting, but by the time the audience get to this, it'll probably be in the rearview mirror. But there was a 180 billion crypto crash on Friday. We're recording this on a Monday morning. I think Solana was, or SOL tokens were off about 30% at one point, but only down, I think I looked this morning, only down about 6 or 7% or something. But what's your take on all of that? And what does that mean for confidence and infrastructure in the blockchain world?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think I think it's important when you look at any asset, it's looking at your risk perspective as well. So I think, you know, people can look at crypto and say, is it a highly fluctuating asset? And I say, at times it is. Yes, for sure. If it's part of your portfolio, it might be on the higher risk curve of your portfolio. For sure, that would be a sensible thing to do.
Yeah.
So I think it's always important when you look at any of these assets is also, one, what is your level of knowledge and understanding versus your risk appetite? So treat it as you would any other asset, you know, and I think make sure you're going in with that informed view. I think sometimes, you know, people have seen, you know, meteoric highs out of crypto, but you've got to manage that with, you know, there has been some very tough moments you've been in crypto and some tough times, and you had to live through that and keep building through those times. I think it's interesting over the weekend, which is obviously traditional markets are only open 9 to 5.
Yes.
Monday to Tuesday. Crypto is 24/7, 365. Yeah. So it's interesting now we're seeing that, you know, I spoke about it kind of interesting at the start, is there's a TradFi, traditional finance, and there's DeFi, decentralized finance. I find it interesting now as an observation, which is that if you're looking out of hours and over the weekend, what's your signal now, financial markets? Now, it used to just be pure traditional markets. Well, now you've seen over the weekend a change in a real world issue, which was, a government policy and a change in terms of trade and tariffs. Now, the impact of that didn't immediately happen in TradFi. The impact of that happened in DeFi.
Yeah.
I just find that super interesting from like, where are people who are looking at money and assets flowing? Well, the actual bellwether was actually in DeFi. It wasn't in TradFi.
And by the time we get to Monday morning, I gather that the smaller wallet holders are all reinvesting and, the asset prices have come back substantially.
Before we jump right into today's episode, a quick thank you to our sponsor, NextWave. NextWave is an award-winning consultancy that is helping many of the world's leading banks, investment managers, and insurers deliver on their growth, efficiency, risk, and control goals and transform their businesses. With a senior team who have come from MD-level positions in major firms like HSBC, Barclays, and UBS, NextWave has both the deep industry expertise and the hands-on capabilities in AI, data, and automation to drive real results. More business outcomes and less PowerPoint from the consulting experience, as their clients like to say. NextWave has moved 2-week manual processes to 5-minute agentic automations, rescued global banking regulatory control programs, and digitized deal platforms, sustainability, and regulatory reporting systems. And they do much of this with hands-on engineering capabilities on leading technologies, which include ServiceNow, Alteryx, Quantexa, and Komunda. So if a modern and specialist alternative to the big brand consulting model sounds appealing, one which covers the full life cycle of strategy specialists and solutions, but with small practitioner teams, rapid delivery, and a better price point, then perhaps you should talk to NextWave. Visit nxwave.com to find out more and get in touch. That's nxwave.com. nextwave.com. All right, let's get back to the episode.
So we had Franklin Templeton on the show a few weeks ago, Sandy Call, who you may know, and Sandy has got a great way of framing the industry as a whole, really, and what she sees coming next. She talked about crypto as the next 50 years of finance. I said that in my introduction. And we are seeing every week, we're seeing announcements from majors that they're tokenizing their assets, big deals between payment providers and blockchain firms, creating payments networks and taking stuff onto chain. So perhaps let's talk a bit about what you're doing with the institutions and where do you see the market currently? Do you see that we're at that tipping point? Maybe we're beyond that tipping point of the next 50 years.
I think for me now, we're not looking at a question of if, but when, which I think is a nice place to be. I think it's also important where, from adoption point of view, like what adoption? So if I start with probably the hardest point, which is financial market infrastructure. Financial market infrastructure emerges over 3, 5, 10, 25 years. So I think it's important to be a little bit humble there and say that, do we see a future state where doing delivery versus payment on a distributed or decentralized network would be more performant than current? I'm sure a number of technologists can get into a very large argument about this, but generally we advocate the view to say, actually, we think it would be a more performant network. To get there, well, we need to drive value-generating use cases. And that's where it becomes interesting for me. So where's this value starting to be generated? I think something you'll find, Solana, and what we talk about a lot is that we are the dominant revenue-generating chain. So for our counterparties, we want them to be revenue-generating as well. So where are we looking at that? For me, first of all, looking at tokenization of assets, it's really important that, why tokenize? Well, there's only two reasons for me today. If you're going to tokenize it from a TradFi perspective, it's giving more utility. Money market funds is a great example. If we can make it a high quality liquid asset, now I can post it instead of cash, but I'm now on margin, but now I'm generating yield at the same time. As you know, people are sat on large cash positions. Small changes, small enhancements of yield there can be profound in terms of balance sheet. So it really does make sense, but hard to do. Because you've got to convince your other financial counterparty that this new tokenized thing is truly high quality and is truly liquid. So I think we're seeing, this logical emergence of opportunities, but still you're seeing that maturity cycle needed in terms of adoption. Sometimes DeFi can be more compelling. So from a DeFi point of view, there is an increasing demand in DeFi for high quality assets, notes, bonds, funds, loans, all the likes. But they're crypto native. So they want tokenized. They want on-chain. They want payment in stablecoin. So we're going to see huge growth coming from that perspective as well. But more broadly across the industry, what do I see that we need? We're seeing the rise of tokenized assets for sure. We're seeing the emergence of ETFs to give exposure to the underlying crypto. We're seeing the rise of stablecoins, both public and private, which is just the ability to do payment on-chain, which is fantastic. And then underneath that more broadly is the... If I could say, I don't want to underplay it, for our financial institution counterparties, the recent significant regulatory shift where previously you could only be deploying on private, closed systems, closed market, closed liquidity. Now we're seeing a desire and an intent to deploy on public. And what does that mean? Well, we now have more liquidity and more distribution, and that's going to make sense for a number of counterparties.
So really interesting point. So there are, as I understand it, over 1,000 public blockchains out there, and institutions have to date, to my observation at least, largely stayed away. But what's changed in terms of, we'll put this on public blockchain?
So I think the recent regulatory shift in the US is quite profound. I think it's for a number of years now, you saw, latent energy in those institutions not being able to be applied to blockchain-based solutions because they were prohibited from doing so. I think that's unlocked now and unlocked quite dramatically, quite significantly. What's going to be the repercussions of that? What's going to be the intent of that? I think you've got two competing forces though, right? So from a public perspective, we would sit there and advocate that. So you may have seen recently, Solana with one of our key partners, MakerDAO, announced a 2.5 billion request for quote, an RFQ. Coming out of Solana for Solana-based products only. Why have we done that? Because our view is to look to our financial counterparties and say, look, why we advocate that if you're building an on-chain solution, Solana is the most performant. Mm. And we can typically justify that to you, hands down. Mm. We want to move the conversation over to assets and capital, and assets and capital be most performant on Solana. But we want you to have that value, right? This is you owning the real estate. It's you owning the rails. It's you owning the clients. Mm. So 2.5 billion turns into revenue. So this is us being able to turn to our clients and say...
So let's just unpack that for a minute then. Yeah. So what does a 2.5 billion RFQ in the... And the DAO is the decentralized asset...
Decentralized autonomous organization.
There you go. Okay. So what does that RFQ constitute? So you're asking or inviting traditional institutions to bid into this process?
100%.
And what are they... bidding. So yeah, help
Great. No, great question. No, perfect. Exactly that. So I think what we're trying to do, what I'm seeking to do more and more from my perspective is there's a language set that you can use to explain what that entity is and what it means from a blockchain perspective. Yeah. So it's a decentralized autonomous organization. Everyone just goes like, and you can hear their legal department in the wings, you know, getting very concerned immediately. I think where rather base it was, this is a legal entity. You can find this legal entity. It has ultimate beneficiary owners. It has bank accounts. So you can find these individuals, right? Which means you can bank them and you can offer them services. Yeah. They're able to mobilize $2.5 billion on their balance sheet, but they're looking for a way to generate yield. And they would like to look at risk. Now, they can go into DeFi very easily. Mm-hmm. What they're looking now is to grow the strength of their treasury and reduce the risk of their balance sheet, which is let's work with traditional parties. Why? Because you're trusted, because you're secure, and because you're regulated. Fantastic. The point here then for me is I think sometimes the disconnect in blockchain world, in crypto, DeFi versus TradFi, is often these two communities, these two groups are just not together. Yeah. They don't talk to each other. They don't use the same language set. They don't interact with each other. And that often means there's low trust. Yeah. There's low relationships. And as we know, businesses principally, relationships. So what can Solana do and the Solana Foundation can do? We can leverage our networks, both in traditional finance, where we're talking to those counterparties, but our deep, obviously, live and breathe it in DeFi and on-chain companies. So we can look at that on-chain company and say, right, if you mobilize your balance sheet, so if you say you have this capital available, mm-hmm. yes, we do. Okay, how do we go and talk to institutions? We go, well, the first thing you should do is you should form a request for quote, which is the way that you define your requirements. Yes. What do you mean by requirements? Like, well, this is what's your investment thesis. You know, if they were going to deploy this, how do they deploy it? Well, it has to be on Solana. Mm. So this all sounds, usually if you're in a finance world, sounds quite obvious. Like, well, of course you would. You define your requirements and your investment thesis. But again, it's recognizing the maturity of the network, and we're trying to bring the network so they can talk to each other. So a request for quote is out in the market. The interesting point now, though, if I put it out to you, though, that request quote is going to run for 12 to 24 months. Mm. Why? Because it takes at least 6 to 12 months to complete discovery, to understand what your investment thesis is, what types of products can be deployed, what's your risk profile. So again, what we're trying to say is this isn't just the I want, I get. This is a discovery process.
Yeah.
And again, going back to our earlier point, it's because we're still early. There's not enough products in the market. There's not enough maturity in the market. Yeah. So we have to acknowledge those things as well.
So if you're inviting institutions to participate in the RFQ, mm-hmm. I mean, they could turn up presumably and say, hey, we could put your $2.5 billion into our money market fund on Solana. Or they could say, let's construct a high yield portfolio product of some sort 100%. Into which we could deploy your $2.5 billion
100%.
At a better yield. But we need to work together to create such a product. Is that kind of how this
exactly
is going to go?
Exactly. But also, yeah. I think if you don't mind saying, like having, you know, you've been in that world, I've been in that world, I'm conscious that, you know, you ask like, what is the pathway of traditional finance on chain?
Yeah.
Well, let's justify their time. We're all extremely busy. Mm. We have OPEX and CAPEX pressures.
Yeah.
We have to prioritize. Well, how do I get you to prioritize? Well, if I present to you capital and flow, which is revenue generating, well, then you'll start to prioritize building on chain. Why? Because it's generating revenue for your business.
Yeah.
And that's where we want to be.
Yeah. So to that point about how to frame this and the narrative and the language, and I've already tripped over a few acronyms in the conversation so far, and there's plenty of them out there in the blockchain world. When you go into traditional institution, you go into mega bank or mega pharma company, and you're going to see the corporate treasurer, you know, what's the conversation you have, and how many of those firms that you're talking to are already speaking the same language?
Yeah. So look, one of the original sins of blockchain is your desire to explain what a blockchain is.
Yes.
Right. And if I ask any other person in traditional finance, so, you know, your current equities desk, what tech are you running on? They're like, I'm looking at a Bloomberg terminal. Cool. Anything else? No. No. And I don't. And also, I don't need to. Yeah. It's not my job. That's not my role. So I think it's really important with blockchain. And I sort of laugh at it because I've burnt myself many a time when you start to explain it. And then half of the conversation, like, this, not that the counterparty can't follow you, by the way, far from it, be like, this didn't create any value. You know, I've explained to you consensus mechanisms. Did you need to know that?
Yeah.
You know, I explained to you the difference between the L1, L2, and the L3. Did you really care?
No.
I've explained to you now what is useful to explain, I would say, and what is useful, it's important for each party to understand. I think the critical thing here is also just that reciprocity, which is like just not what we want to say, what the other counterparty hears.
Mm.
So to give you an example, there are some things where we're aligned, some things where sometimes there is a philosophical differentiation. So if you're coming out of crypto, you believe typically in decentralization. Okay, you think decentralization. And also you may actually philosophically believe that you want to be the custodian of your own assets. Mm. Now, if you believe in those two things, you're often diametrically opposite of some regulators or some institutions because they're predicated on central custody of assets and that they're the counterparty that moves value. So you're like, oh, okay, so we are sometimes quite different worldviews in terms of adoption. However, where do we start to have meeting of minds? I think it's a good place to be. Typically is a few things. And I like to use this language now when I go and speak to institutions. Let's use their language set. So you're seeking flow. So in Solana, our value is 130 billion. Okay, so if I can mobilize even a small proportion of that capital, would you be interested? And generally the conversation is, yes, we are a bank. We're interested in capital and drawing capital into our enterprise. Fantastic. So let's really focus on that part.
Yeah.
How do we create that? The second one is there anything you're doing today that we could create new distribution for? So then you look at our network. So in our, let's say in our DeFi, in our Solana world, I have entities, I have companies, I have family offices, I have high net worths, and I have retail. That's a distribution network. Oh, we like distribution networks because we have existing products, or we'll build new products if you can give us access to distribution. I'm like, good. So we started off with flow and revenue.
Yep.
Everyone recognizes that. Distribution, clients, everyone recognizes that. Then if you want to get into the infrastructure, it's just being mindful of, I would generally say two things, which is blockchain, because it can be a distributed, decentralized network, can be a more efficient way of consolidating liquidity.
Yeah.
And the second one could be smart contracts. And then typically then what you're describing is where you may complete an operational process today, and that has an OPEX cost to you.
Yeah.
We could program that operational process into a contract. So if a value is reached, it automatically redeems. Or if two counterparties do agree something, we auto execute the transaction.
Yeah.
I honestly tend to avoid going any further into blockchain because I question, why should I explain? What's the value of explaining it to you?
Yeah. And how many of those corporate treasurers say, nodding along and say, yeah, I knew all that, or are you really starting at the beginning with most of these conversations?
Look, we are very keen to invest a huge amount of time to talk about anything related to blockchain. So generally what's fun is usually counterparties that generally go, oh, hey, look, I've been holding a bit of Sol. I've done really well out of it.
Yeah.
Or I've been on this DEX, this decentralized exchange. It was super cool. Or I bought this meme coin. So you find certain individuals, generally because a lot of people in finance are traders themselves.
Yeah.
So they've traded in crypto for a while. So generally they've been in crypto for 3-4 years and they're like, and my firm is just starting. So for an individual basis, which is generally not a problem. But no, we spend time and invest in understanding from like, what's the journey from Bitcoin to, you know, EVM to, from Bitcoin to Ethereum, then through to Solana and why Solana. And then more broadly, what functions do we start seeing appearing on chain? So whether that's custody, transfer agent, stable coins, staking, all these different aspects. I'll probably pause there because you can probably see we could talk for hours about it. I think the important thing is, if I can come back to your point, is purpose.
Yeah.
So if you're sat in front of a CEO, maybe it's talking macro market forces. So just, you know, emergence of new wealth, accessing new wealth. if you're talking to the digital asset team, you might be having a huge geek out about stablecoins and staking and underlying. If you're talking to the heads of distribution,
yeah,
talk about new products and new markets. So I think it's just making sure you're talking, you know, the right purpose, the right audience.
And for those who've taken a speculative position on the token, you mentioned Sol, adoption, volume increase. This is good for the token price because it's, I think that that's what's driving the transaction fees on the network. Is that right? So is that why the price goes up?
Gosh. With all sincerity, I would not like to comment on what materially has an impact on Sol price, and definitely would not be my position of expertise. I think, look, for us, from a foundation perspective, I think we would like to see, you know, value creation on chain. That's the focus for us. I think it's interesting that, you know, value in Sol is in Solana itself as a technology is not just predicated on holding Sol. My focus is more on how do we enable firms to build infrastructure, to build services that they can charge for and that are revenue generating? Like, in some ways, it sounds far too super simple, but it is that. You know, we have institutions today that you could say are looking for custody providers, UI, on-chain data, all focused on Solana. All those services are commercially orientated and all generate value for startup scale-ups and existing enterprises. So that's where I see the real value creation today.
Yeah. So we've covered the sort of growth and efficiency / operational aspects to a certain extent. There's all the things that you can do on the blockchain. And clearly the network, the Solana network in particular, is highly performant and covers certainly the throughput that institutions would look for. What about compliance, governance, regulation? How do you cover off the, oh, but is it safe? How do I control it? How do I govern this?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I'll try and find the link for it. There was a really interesting paper written by the US Secret Service that was thanking fraudsters for using some on-chain solutions because it was more transparent than using Dollar itself. So there are those kind of ironic ones where, so I would say, having sat in a financial institution and sat with KYC, KYB, financial crime colleagues, on-chain data is better than TradFi data. Why? Because I can look at your wallet. I can look at the interconnections between your wallet. I can see significantly richer and greater data about your activity on chain. So I would look at that from that perspective first, which is sometimes, well, not sometimes, in a number of occasions, it's better than previous. Where do we stand from a risk compliance point of view? I think it's really important that any regulatory scheme that we have today, any compliance requirements we have today, have to directly overlay onto an on-chain solution. It's a mirroring. It has to be a same as. And typically, well, in near every instance I've seen today, it is.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise a regulated institution would not deploy that product. So I think it's really important that we're seeing, you know, BlackRock's on public Solana, Franklin Templeton is, Societe Generale in Europe is. So we're seeing financial institutions that have crossed the Rubicon, as it were, and are now on public. And it's a fact for them. What are some of the challenges we see? typically, from my perspective, you often start, first of all, from that kind of procurement conversation of, you know, where's the data? What's the cyber risk? What's the key management? All those types of things. But again, you're just describing and engaging blockchain just as a technology service. So it's in some ways, it's nothing different. It's just like, well, how you assess any technology, you just assess the underlying technology here. And a lot of the compliance criteria from institutions happen off-chain. So, you know, key managers are a great one. If you're providing a cloud service today, you manage thousands of keys that secure huge amounts of critical data.
Yeah.
Here's some keys for some wallets. You have a, you usually already have a risk framework to manage that point. So I think important thing for me is what you do today, you would do on-chain. Fact, you just replicate across. That's all things that are possible. There are some opportunities to do it better, though. So the transparency of data on-chain offers more insight, I think, from a KYC, KYB perspective, for sure. It offers an enhanced solution. And often you're seeing regulators now thinking innovatively that, okay, from a smart contract point of view, I can start to code compliance rather than allowing operational control to enact compliance. And you find that really interesting inflection point there.
Yeah, I like that idea about programmable compliance, because in traditional compliance, you can get these human process driven fuzzy edges and things perhaps not being reviewed frequently or just dropping through the cracks. But if you program it into the network, then that's a solid guide rail.
It is. I mean, look, if you look back at some of the issues that happen on chain, what's really important is that contracts autocomplete.
Yeah.
So over the weekend, you know, go back to the earlier point you described, there was a reason, you know, I'd say dramatic moment. That's probably, it's crypto, so it's not that dramatic. But there was a moment where there was this significant enforcement of contracts where people have gone typically long on certain positions.
Yeah.
They all automatically completed over a weekend. Mm. So I think it's really, don't get me wrong, you know, I don't want to be dismissive about that event, far from it. But I think if you look at the underlying of it, it's actually quite impressive that globally on a distributed decentralized network, yeah, all those contracts auto-completed.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't need a person to do it because no one was there on a Saturday and Sunday to work.
No. I'm sure the people holding those contracts are probably watching.
Yes. Let's not talk about that.
So tell us a bit about R3 and Solana, because there was a press release, and I think in time of recording, I'm thinking maybe a couple of months back, about taking R3's private blockchain assets onto Solana. So can you tell us a bit about what that's all about?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I mean, first of all, look, really excited and about, you know, the potential and scalability of what we can do with R3 and Solana. I think it's always fun to look at. I spend a lot of time with, you know, Dave Richard and Digby and the team, because they're based here in London. Great team. Where do I start, first of all? First of all, obviously, we poke fun at each other. So, you know, Richard, who's the CTO of R3, is always good fun, because we can say, look, for a number of years now, you know, R3 has been throwing shade on public networks to say, like, private is the right solution for financial institutions.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important to acknowledge from an R3 perspective, and that kind of, you know, they've lived and breathed this evolution of adoption in financial institutions. Mm. If you were 5+ years ago pitching a public solution to financial institutions, and that was the predicate of your commercial model for your business, you wouldn't exist by now. You would have gone bankrupt, right? Yeah. I think it's really important to acknowledge that, you know, the technology and how you position the technology has to be of its time. What R3's been offering and what they've demonstrated, they've got, you know, 18 billion of assets on R3.
Yeah.
You know, it's unassailable. They've been successful in getting assets on chain and in a way that was appropriate for financial institutions at that time. So I think it's a real success story from that perspective. I think, again, recognizing the team, what they do, they've had the vision to look forward, and we would advocate for this and say, look, what we're seeing now is the emergence with changing regulatory environment that banks can now be on public, and they can. So where we're going to see the next wave of adoption, it's going to be on public networks. And they've positioned themselves to say, well, look, we can be the bridge between what financial institutions previously needed, which was private, and now bringing them onto public. Behind that, though, I think one thing that I really advocate for, and I think it's a need, is that, you know, Solana Foundation, look, we're here to advocate for the technology, and we think give a route to revenue for our institutional counterparties. So really kind of create that potential. Who's going to actually build the technology, run the change programs, you know, embed these solutions across? And as you know, you and I were speaking earlier, it's really important to acknowledge the scale of kind of, at times, operational, technical, risk, compliance, legal change that's needed. And I think this is where, you know, R3 becomes a powerhouse, because they have that institutional credibility and they know how to execute at scale.
Very good. I love what you did there. You said the next wave of adoption, which is an excuse for a shameless plug for the next wave consulting business. So if anyone's actually got this far in the conversation, you've probably already heard the ad, but this is in the change and transformation space, and integration of all of these technologies is where the consulting business plays as well. So maybe there's another conversation to be had after this.
Yeah. Always.
So what's next from Solana itself then?
I think in some ways, whenever you're looking a technology like Solana, where it's come from is sometimes a periphery contrarian view, which has been extremely successful holding to.
Yeah.
It is an innovative piece of technology, and it's emerged in the market in that space. I think where we're seeing now, really interesting, is a demand from the center out. Okay, so you're seeing now an intent from institutions and also from corporates and corporate treasurers as well, that we want on-chain solutions, we want tokenized assets. We want exposure to these sometimes high-yielding assets. Yeah. We want more efficiency with our cash and netting our cash or yield from our cash. All none of these are blockchain narratives. They're just people want to get more value. Yeah. How do we get them there, though? I think the slight tightrope, and I think is well within the foundation's ability to do, is to walk. Don't lose sight of how this technology emerged was that slightly contrarian view. And I think we have to hold true to that at times. And sometimes that can be challenging philosophical. We believe that a distributed or a decentralized system is better than a central system. And yet we need to acknowledge at times that certain regulatory counterparties or institutional counterparties would diametrically disagree with that.
Yeah.
So I think there's still going to be natural points of friction, but maturity going together hand in hand, that evolution hand in hand. What's going to happen next? For me, we're going to see multi-billions of real-world assets, up to trillions of assets over the next 1, 3, 5 years coming on chain and coming onto Solana. We're going to see, I think, an opening up of DeFi and TradFi coming together. DeFi will have to deal with its intent around KYC, KYB and doxing. And TradFi will suddenly go, well, that's super interesting. You're another form of capital, another way to distribute our products.
Yes.
That's super interesting. We really like both of those things as well. I think from a relational point of view, I think this is probably the most important thing. What we're starting to see now at conferences, at events, is, typically counterparties that would not be side by side. You know, the DeFi hoodies with the TradFi suits, and they would never be going in the room together. I think today, if you look more and more, and LinkedIn's usually an indicator of this, people that are 20 years equity heads of desk now have a startup or have joined a blockchain firm. There are hundreds and thousands of people that have made that transition.
Yeah.
And I think that's really indicative of the market, is that these people are very intelligent, very commercially orientated, very revenue generated, very revenue orientated individuals.
Yeah.
And they've made the jump because they see the value of why. So from a financial, from a Solana perspective, we will continue innovating on our products, improving it. Performance, and also making it as easy accessible to developers as possible. We'll see real world assets, ETFs, stable coins, all scaling on Solana. But fundamentally, it comes back to, I think, the loop of our conversation, which is all those things are great. The how do you do that is really getting to the weeds of, how do we remove friction? So this is just technology. So how do we simplify your onboarding?
Yeah.
How do we have a great set of products for you to use? And how do we generate revenue for your business?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think we've answered the question I asked you right at the very beginning. Was are we past the tipping point? And from what you've just said about the adoption and the scale of the assets that are going to go on chain, I think we've answered the question. We're past the tipping point. So, if you're in the institutional audience for this conversation, you're probably already involved. And if you're not, you should be looking at it, I think.
100%. Yeah, agree.
So look, we're going to time out. So this is a crypto conversation. So should I buy Bitcoin?
I cannot and should not ever provide investment advice. You shouldn't talk about sex, drugs, religion, and crypto at work. There was three, now there's four.
Okay, that was a comedy unfair question at the end of the conversation.
It's a fair one. It's always a fair one.
And in terms of any recommendations for the audience, what you're reading or listening to currently, Ben?
Flash Boys. That's a good one to read.
Okay.
Yeah.
Michael Lewis.
Yeah. I always find that interesting. That was a good read for me. I think it's just important just to understand, like in finance, just understand where you sit in the value chain and are you the product? I think it's really important a view from a crypto point of view, to flip it slightly, is that, in blockchain, you aren't necessarily the product, right? Yeah. In previous ways of technology, you were both the money and the product yourself.
Yeah.
So just be really aware from an institutional perspective, like who's generating value for you? And if you were to self-custody your assets, all the value comes back to you rather than giving it to other people.
Yeah. And I don't know how many, it's an interesting choice of book. It's fantastic. All of Michael Lewis's books are amazing. And that low latency trading sort of revolution. I wonder whether there's any parallels with what's going on in crypto. And perhaps at the sort of meme coin end of it, and this is, someone's going to pillory me for making that association, maybe. But broader in terms of the evolution of the blockchain ecosystem, I would say absolutely not, because it's been out there for over 10 years and it's been a slow build. It's just I think we're just seeing a sort of huge acceleration recently on the back of some of the regulation and adoption.
Yeah, look, all aspects of finance exist today, exist on chain. Yeah. The only thing you review them at is some of them are primitives, is the way you review them.
Yeah.
But anything you can do in traditional finance, you can do on chain. Yeah. Yeah. Generally, you can extract more yield because there's no counterparties.
Yeah.
So, I could hold my money in a savings account, or I could hold my money in a stable coin and get double or triple the APY.
Yeah.
Where would you hold your money?
Yeah. Coins. Wallets are the way ahead.
100%.
Indeed. Okay. So where to find out more, Ben, if anyone wants to get in touch or ask you some more difficult questions about what's going on?
Yeah. So please, you know, on LinkedIn. So if you want to reach out to me directly on LinkedIn and ping me there, I'll always try and be, if you can forgive time, I'll always try and reply. Or if not, go to slana.org and you can see what we're doing. Follow us on X. And follow Slana Foundation on LinkedIn will be the best way to find out what we're doing.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thanks for making time for the conversation. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks very much. Cheers to you. Thanks.